ready for takeoff.
Welcome to the Remote CEO Show. My name is De Niro Bartolini, aka De Niro B. I'm an acclaimed business coach, and my moonshot is to change the face of work and business forever. With each episode, we bring you some of the most inspiring and insightful interviews with 6, 7, 8, and 9-figure entrepreneurs to crack the code on how to build your remote empire and have fun while doing it. Thanks for stopping by, and let's get started.
What's going on, CEOs? De Niro B here with another episode of the Remote CEO Show. Today, I'm here with Kevin Kleiman. Kevin is the CEO and co-founder of Humi, a leading all-in-one employment solution for Canadian businesses. He's passionate about enriching Canada's tech talent pool, reinvesting back into the community, and helping Canadian companies take better care of their people. Today, we'll be talking about building culture and retaining talent. Very excited for this chat, so let's get right into it.
Kevin, welcome to the Remote CEO Show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It is my pleasure. I ask every single one of my guests to tell us a bit more about their story. So, Kevin, what made you become an entrepreneur?
It's a good question. I have been doing entrepreneurial-like things as long as I can remember. It was lemonade stands. It was little like yard sales as a kid. It was a whole bunch of like hustles coming out through high school, handful of bootstrap businesses through college and grad school. And then, now I run a venture back startup, but it took maybe 25, 28 years to get there.
Well, that is fantastic. I hear a lot of entrepreneurs and everybody that I interview, they have either the story that they always knew they were entrepreneurs from day one, or that they thought they were going to be employee-style workers. And then after a year or two of working as an employee, they just went crazy and they were like, okay, this is actually not what I wanted. So it's pretty cool that you knew from earlier what you wanted to do, at least that you wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so take us to when you started this startup, and what first off made you start a startup and this size startup, and what problem were you trying to solve with your audience and with your target market?
Yeah, absolutely. So the year was end of 2015, beginning of 2016. And at the time, cloud-based apps were really starting to become more accepted in mainstream. It seems wild to say now, but back then people were very afraid to put stuff into the cloud. Everything was on-prem for a significant business. And the tools for managing employees digitally were generally not accessible to a lot of businesses. You'd have to do some of the server-based thing. You'd have to do a Workday Success Factors or something like Ceridian that's really big and really expensive. And I saw a movement of business productivity software for SMBs that really took my attention. And it's very clear that SMBs are the beating heart of the country's economy in a lot of ways. In Canada, something like 85% of everyone who's employed gets a paycheck from an SMB. And the idea that we could build software to help those companies employ people better was inspiring to me. And immediately believed there'd be a big business. So we build software that helps Canadian companies employ people. So everything from recruiting to running their payroll, managing their HR, and help benefits, it's all into a single, simple to use platform for companies.
All right. That is fantastic. And so I know that my listeners want to know more about putting together teams in a most efficient way. And there's no one better to ask this question to someone that actually has been doing that work. And so let's go back to 2015, 2016, or whenever you start putting your team together. I'm sure this was a time where you were like, okay, I'm going to start hiring people. And so looking back, what was your thought process and who did you end up hiring to take the load off and kind of help you scale from there?
Mm-hmm. So at the outset, it was just myself and my co-founder doing the recruiting. We started it 7, 8 years ago with just the two of us. And it was very important for us that the first handful of people who came to the company were a very strong cultural fit to what we hope to build. Our first dedicated recruiter didn't come until we were about 30 or so people on the team.
Okay. So after how long, sorry, you said?
This would have been, I think, 3 years in. 3 years in, we would have brought a formal, like, dedicated recruiter in-house.
And a recruiter. So that was one of your first, like, so to speak, official hires?
No, the first recruiter would have been like the 30th to 35th. Our first hire was a customer support person. Our first hire was a salesperson, first couple, and then the customer support, and the more developers.
More developers. Yeah. Because I'm assuming that one of your co-founders, maybe even you, are one of the developers of the tools?
Matt was my initial co-founder in the company. He's technical. He built the V1 of what Xiaomi is today.
Okay. Fantastic. And so if you look back, and so this is, again, an important question, because a lot of my listeners are there and they're like, I'm doing everything, right? And so because you're doing everything, they could potentially delegate any of those tasks. And so what is, and I know that this is, every business is different. SaaS businesses are different, obviously, from e-commerce, and e-commerce different from something else. But what is the thought process that you think about when you are actually trying to untangle this, right? Like, with limited resources, and you obviously don't want to hire people that are going to be sitting around like for 20 hours because there's not enough work. So how do you know when it's the time to hire the next person, when you are on a budget and when you want to clear up your schedule a bit?
I think any version of like the thought process boils down to leverage and the requirement for leverage in the business to get to like sort of like the next of the goalposts that you want to get to. And it comes in two different forms. One is just time.
Yeah.
And like labor, you know, the ability to like do more of X. And the other one is in expertise.
Yeah.
And I think being very thoughtful about understanding when it's more time and like labor versus more expertise. You know, often it's a mix and it's not completely binary. But thinking about like, you know, when have you run out of hours to stop responding to emails and just need more people? When do you need somebody in compliance, you know, in this very specific regulatory area that you just like have no experience in?
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, the best way to understand that is to try and go do it themselves, to feel the pain where like you start to burn out, or where, you know, your usefulness tends to start diminishing returns.
That makes total sense. And so I want to switch gears real quick and talk about the team that you currently have. How many people work at Xiaomi right now?
There are 140 people who work.
So are they all local or are they located across Canada?
They are located across Canada. Maybe 60% of the employee base is in or around the greater Toronto area. We have this beautiful, massive office in Toronto that was rented pre-COVID, but have like five people come in on a daily basis. You know, people work remotely. We're very worried about being remote first. We'll come together in person, you know, a handful of times throughout the year, but the vast majority of work within our company happens remotely.
That is fantastic. And so it's right up our alley, and I wanted to ask you this, and I want to break this down in a couple of questions. So first thing is, running a remote team, you know, here at the Remote CEO, we had a peak of maybe like 25 remote team members. And so I remember the struggles of trying to keep everybody on the same page, especially because for us, it was a team that was all over the world, right? Like even 12-hour difference sometimes. But for you guys, even if you're somewhat local, but still remote, how do you make sure that everybody's A, on the same page, and that everybody is kind of working according to the same corporate culture, even though they can't meet on a daily basis, you know, in front of the coffee machine or going out for walk? Mm-hmm.
Communication, I think, is just very hard within the company, whether you're like all in person or remote. Remote obviously has its unique challenges because you just don't have proximity to people. So they can't feel, you know, they can't do the coffee thing. You can't go for like random lunches with people. And, you know, really emphasizing the importance of culture in communication. I think communication and culture are intertwined in a lot of ways. And, you know, there's a lot of company level messaging you can do, but by far the most powerful connections with the company happen between, you know, the people who are ICs and the people who manage them. managers and then direct reports. So I think being very thoughtful about how you communicate with your direct reports, because in a lot of ways, they will draft off that communication style and interact with their direct reports in a similar fashion. So if there are things that are broken at the highest level,
yeah,
I would expect that those cracks will show throughout the organization.
Right. Cool. And so I talk to a lot of people that have global teams again, and they do spend quite a bit of money putting together one-time events every year where people and talk. You said it's 60% of your staff members are around the greater Toronto area. So probably like 50 to 70 kilometers, possibly from the office at most. How often do you require or would you like your team to meet up? And outside, I mean, like some of it may be work-related meetings, but how about to get together to do something else, like team luncheons or anything along those lines? Do you still do those or?
So our expectations are for people within the company is that they get together at minimum 3 to 4 times a year. One of those times is a like large company get together. The other times, the formal team get togethers are normally planned around, launches or cadences within the company that are important for work. And, I think both are very important in like coming together to do some like focused and like challenging work, but also to build the bonds and trust and friendship within the team. I think the two go like very much hand in hand. And I think coming together to do something that's challenging or that is made better by being in the same place, really helps to form those bonds and to like open the door to have like better relationships and have fun times out at dinner that night or doing acts drawing or whatnot. So oftentimes when people come together, it's a day, 2 days of hard work, a like fun activity and some like good meals together.
Interesting. And so you find that even that one time that they meet once in a while, it expands, that kind of bond expands outside of that specific meeting, and people then are better communicators amongst each other, even when they're working remotely in their own location. Is that correct?
Yeah. It gives you better context around the person. It helps you the ability to joke around with somebody is so underrated, it's just so hard to communicate, to build like a deeper level of communication when the only way you communicate is through very formal company structure like Zoom meets or Slack interactions or whatnot. It's good to have stuff outside of that.
100%. And so I want to switch gears a second and talk about the marketing, because I do have some of our listeners that have asked precisely this question about marketing a SaaS business and product-led marketing versus or sales versus salespeople selling the product. Do you have both options? You said that you hired some salespeople, but have you done any product-led sales where people just self-serve on your website? If so, is there a threshold of like amount of money that you would kind of delegate, so to speak, the selling to the machine and not involve a person, versus when would you start investing in a person doing the selling? What would that either lifetime value of the sale be, or what's the threshold?
Mm-hmm. So for the first while within our company, it was not product-led sales. So it was people fostered sales, right term for it is. We have such a wide range of customers. We service companies for 5 to 500 people.
Yeah.
And we made the decision that it was worth over-investing in onboarding, building trust up front. That being said, we have built tools to help people expand their accounts,
yeah,
product-led motion, and are always trying to find ways to make it help us better support companies that like aligns really well with the economics of that customer. So like a lot of internal tools to help onboard smaller companies. They don't need as much hand-holding and in-depth onboarding and change management.
Yeah.
And so streamlining that a different way, having a different team with different expectations, has been very healthy for our company. So we've done bits of both, but mostly the sales-led sales.
Okay. And it does obviously like work very well. Like you said, it's about just knowing that you would have to overinvest a bit at the very beginning if you want to have like a, some sort of like a wide glove onboarding experience for the new clients. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So I just wanted to know, like, Kevin, is there anything that your product or like whether it be your product or yourself that you're working on that's exciting that you, that's coming down the pike that you want to share with our audience?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we have a really exciting product that is just launched like within the last couple of months. So we have a deep, like, we have a deep focus on building features that are uniquely Canadian or uniquely like centered around Canadian companies. One of the important programs in Canada for supporting employment is research and development credit, refundable tax credits. So a good amount of engineering salaries and technical exploration is supported by the government to the tune of $3.5 billion a year. And a lot of the information required to put together the claims to get that money back lives inside the employment system of record. And so we've built something to help facilitate the creation of what's called shred claims in Canada. So it's very exciting that we can help companies do that in addition to payroll and manage the health benefits, manage all the compliance with respect to employment and HR within their company.
That is fantastic. I don't know if a platform like this exists outside of Canada for the respective countries, but definitely Canadian, including mine, obviously, are definitely at an advantage because of tools like yours. So that's super cool. Listen, Kevin, I'm sure that our audience will want to know more about Humi as well as you. So where can people find you online?
I like Twitter. My handle is Kate Lyman. But, you know, if you search Humi on all the major socials, probably pretty easy to find.
Right. That is fantastic. We're looking forward to having you back in the future to talk about more features. And in the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
And this is it for today, CEOs. Thanks for staying with us until the end. Can I ask you a big favor? Can you please leave a review? I know the podcast app is not super straightforward, so if you don't know how to leave a review, just DM me on Instagram at DeNiroB, DeNiroB, and I will send you the direct link to the review section. And to show you my appreciation, I will answer any business question you ask me during that conversation. So thank you again, and I will talk to you again soon.